This podcast is a proud member of the Second Unit Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at 2upn.blogspot.com or on Facebook under the Second Unit Podcast Network. We've got
Drunk on VHS,
Film Reviews from the Basement,
The After Movie Diner,
The Cold Couch,
Something Weird This Way Comes with Rue and Mo,
and
The Dead End Driver Naked.
The Second Unit Podcast Network, bringing you the action and leaving the boring stuff to the other guys. Shit, look out! Zombies!
He threw him right in the lake. He must have the strength of 10 men.
She said he was big and hairy. It must have been some kind of an animal.
I don't think I like it around here anymore.
Why do kids make me sick?
Oh, please, use my body to keep you alive.
Drugs. Often the introduction comes in the form of a goofball.
Paula, I may be a bitch, but I'll never be a butch.
No better than the girl who sells herself to a man. You're worse. And now, little Miss Butler, she's stubborn, and she's all outraged, birch.
I have a drug here, LSD. Perhaps you've heard of it.
Inside your dirty. Do you hear me? Dirty.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another Something Weird This Way Comes. I am Mo, and with me is that cuddly Canadian, the man we call Rue.
Hey, everyone.
Now, Rue, it's been a couple of weeks since we recorded episode one. Mm-hmm. What have you been up to?
Same old, same old. I spent a lot of time sitting in my house, and I go to work and try to make other people famous, and that's pretty much what I do with my time. How have you been?
I hear sitting in your house is like a national pastime of Canada.
It is, especially in winter.
Well, we do baseball here in the States, which is equally boring.
Well, that's true.
And I've been teaching myself how to play ukulele,
which is awesome.
Yeah,
and I'm
getting pretty good.
Really? We might have to get you to serenade at some point during an episode.
We'll see. But yeah, we have got a no pun intended killer episode today. You know, our first actual Something Weird video.
Mm-hmm.
It's the nudie cutie nudist colony horror, The Beast That Killed Women.
The Beast That Killed Women, horror very loosely.
They got to be very creative back in the 60s, you know, on how they could get away with all sorts of different kind of nudity.
Yeah.
And one of the most popular ways before the official start of the nudie cutie era was this type of movie, this nudist colony movie, the most famous of which is like Nude on the Moon, you know. Mm. But this is up there. This is a pretty well known nudist colony film. The Beast That Killed Women. It's a very good example of the box selling the movie better than the movie does. But I'm a total mark. I'm an absolute mark for these kind of movies. Like I am a like a Carney Barker's wet dream. You know. They say a sucker's born every minute, and I am that sucker.
Which is, you know, the cover art was exciting for those who want to check it out. Obviously, it's on Something Weird. We also put it up on I have it up on our Facebook right now. It's pretty cool, a giant gorilla hand gripping a naked lady. If the gorilla was that large, that would have been kind of cool. But
it would have made for a better film. But this is pretty standard in regards to the you know, the beast in a lot of these nudist camp movies is essentially a guy in a gorilla suit. Mm. I mean, in this case, it's actually just a guy in a gorilla suit. And, you know, and they actually make a joke about it at one point in the movie where they go, you know, at first I thought it was just a guy in a gorilla suit, but then I, you know, and then it's like, no, 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 it's a guy in a gorilla suit.
And
you
even
know,
better, it's not just a guy, it's the director. So he put himself into the movie there. He actually did that twice, but
that's awesome.
His most prominent role would probably be the Beast. But there you go. Like, that's how you get into your own film. He also got a chance to grab ladies and carry them around.
Nice.
But yeah, I don't know. I found it entertaining. I don't know where you'd like to start.
Well, let's start at the beginning, basically. You know, we've got a guy, you know, he's sitting in a hospital smoking, which I thought was awesome.
That's amazing.
You know, it's really realistic. You know, the guy is like, you know, is obviously not any kind of like Marlboro product placement or anything there, but yeah, he's sitting in his hospital room, sitting in his hospital bed smoking.
Smoking and apparently with internal injuries.
Yeah. He's got internal injuries, but he's smoking, so it makes total sense. You know, nothing. You know, coughing is the best medicine. Apparently,
well, it was the good old days. So it was fine.
Yeah. So he's being interviewed by a cop, and he starts. And basically, the whole entire movie is told through, you know, flashback vignettes of really what's happened over the last like 2 days. You know, and you know, we find out that, oh, they're nudists. Oh no.
Well, I don't really know what good it'll do, but here goes. See, my wife's a nudist. Well, for that matter, so am I. But she was a nudist first.
You know,
in a very sort of matter of fact, he's like, my wife's a nudist, and
well, my wife's
I guess
a nudist.
That makes me one too.
Yeah, please. You know, it's. I love the guy in the bed, though, the husband character. He really, you know, I mean, as far as like the acting is concerned, he's probably one of the better actors in the film, which is of course probably why he got that role.
Yeah, the one he speaks the most and actually delivers lines.
Yeah,
as opposed
to
improvising lines, which most of the movie's made up of.
This movie is 99% mumbling.
Mumbling in echoey rooms.
Yeah, there is so much like mumbling going on between groups of 2 to 7 or 8, you know, like women or combination women and men. It's just, it's amazing. It's amazing how much mumbling takes place in this movie. Like, I mean, you couldn't think of, and then of course, what'll happen a lot in this movie too, and we actually saw this in, slightly differently, but the same idea in Beginning of the End, where they'll repeat a lot of the same stuff over and over again. What, you know, like I noticed, like basically the movie works in phases.
Yes.
You know, it's basically something happens, you know, one group of people talks about it, another group of people talks about it, a third group of people talks about it, and then you get the consequence of it. Then something happens, then another group of people talks about it, another group of people talks about it, a third group of people talks about it, and then we have the consequences. And it just, and ad nauseum, it just goes over and over again. It's the entire movie.
They occasionally break it with a sort of musical montage sequence.
With
the music and people walking around, which...
Yeah,
which is fascinating.
Now, I don't know how familiar you are with the whole world of nudist camp movies, but there's one thing that is required. Like, I don't know if it started off as a joke or something, but literally, and I do mean literally, every nudist camp movie has a volleyball scene.
I thought that was a cliche. I'll admit, like, this is probably my first nudist camp movie. I actually had to look up what nudie cutie meant because I'd really never heard of it, but it kept popping up online with people talking about the movie.
See, now, this like nudist camp movies and nudie cuties to me are two very different things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I mean, I know they fall under the same realm. They're both nudie cuties, really, in actuality. But for me, like the whole idea of the nudie cutie always revolved around like a Peeping Tom character, like walking around, and magically there are naked women basically everywhere he goes, and he gets to look at them, and it's very voyeuristic, and you know, and there's no touching allowed, and it's very innocent, if not totally creepy. Whereas the nudist camp movies, they don't even think about the nudity that's happening. Like, there's no, like, regard to the nudity at all. It's basically they go, oh, we're nudists. And then next thing you know, everybody's nude.
Interesting. Yeah. See, I would never have known that. One thing I did find very interesting about the movie was the lack of nudity in a lot of scenes.
There's a surprise. Well, I mean, like, it's funny. Like, right at the beginning of the movie, that you know, they just got done talking about how they're nudists, and then they wake up, and I mean, they cut to a scene of them waking up from bed, and they're dressed.
They're dressed, and what do? They go get dressed again. Essentially, yeah. They go
which, by the way, is the longest shot of a woman getting dressed I've ever seen. but she did have those classic, like, come out to a point fucking, like, 50s bomber tits, you know?
Yeah, there was a lot of side boob, and that was sort of my introduction. I knew what I was in for at that point.
But this was always, like, really, like, super, like... like super side boob, where it would be like, you know, side boob is like you're not really supposed to see the nipple.
Yeah.
You just see the side of the boob itself. Or I hear people call cleavage side boob as well, but I hold a different opinion of that. But yeah, there'd be a lot of boob from the side, they would show full on nipple. So you got a lot of like really weird shots of girls going out of their way to bend in the wrong direction of the person they're talking to just so that their tits would be on screen.
It was pretty magical. I sometimes wonder, like, was it stage direction or did they just know? Because
No. You one look from any of the women's faces on there and you know that it's stage direction. There's somebody off camera saying, "Now shift your body more," cuz you'd see them look off screen.
Yeah.
You know, you'd see them look off camera and then shift their body and then look back to the person who they're talking to. You know, yeah, the acting is charmingly amateurish.
Which is, there was sort of a little point that I was confused. It starts off, obviously, one of the very first title scenes is a card that says that it's starring Miami's most lovely nudists.
Yes. Yeah, which, most nudist films took place in Florida.
And they actually just went and, I guess, got some nudists together. I looked it up, and a lot of these ladies were actually in other movies, too. So I kind of had this weird thought to myself that maybe they just sort of went to a nudist colony and delivered them scenes to improvise, and that's why it was so awkward.
No, absolutely. That's 100% correct. That's exactly what happened.
Well, they were pretty good for what they had to do. So,
oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's a tit flick. It's not really, you know. I mean, it's. I did enjoy the fact that all of the ladies, like whenever the ladies were completely nude and not just in underwear, that they always magically had a towel that would cover themselves up in front. It is pretty great.
Yes, or the one scene where they had to jump to get the towel off the wall, which was...
Oh, that was so great. I did a note about that. I loved that. Like, this great, like, moment where it's 3 inches too high, and they have to keep jumping up and down to get the towel off the ledge.
There's a good 2 minutes of hopping.
Yeah, and that's a great example. That scene right there is a great example of them taking stage direction, because you see that shorter girl with the big ass... You know, she kept looking back. Like, she wasn't even looking off camera. She would look like almost like directly at the camera and wait for her next bit of instruction, and then she'd turn around and jump again.
Jumping again, yeah.
Love it.
So just to pull it back to plot, we've talked a lot about boobies, which I did actually mention on Twitter that I'd probably be saying a lot tonight. So there was a lot of boobies. I wanted to bring up the phone call from the very beginning when Betty is calling. I love phone calls in movies like this where it's clear they aren't talking to another person.
Yeah.
They're basically just delivering their lines to blank space. This one was especially great because she would leave gaps so small that there was no way a person could even possibly get the information she's responding to them.
Oh, I'm glad I got you in. I'm over at the camp right now. Oh, it's beautiful. We're having a marvelous time. Gee, I was hoping you'd be able to come over for the weekend. You really ought to. You'll be so glad you came. That's a shame. Gee, I'm sorry. If you change your mind, though, you'll call, won't you? Yeah, well, I'm in the office right now, and I want to get out in the sunshine. Good. Take care of yourself. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Yep.
That was an amazing sequence. There are about 3 phone calls like that, and I think they're all with the same girl. I guess she had the best phone voice, so they wanted to use her.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's probably the case. She probably was really good at reading dialogue, but not good at acting it. So
yeah.
They probably put her, you know, put her in a position where she could read her dialogue directly. And yeah.
She was lots of fun. I'd also like to note, basically, after the plot gets started, after they get to the nudist colony, there's another great, or nudist camp, there's this great sequence where there are these two people who want to join the nudist camp, and one of them gives the line, "I didn't realize it was so hard to join a nudist camp."
How long have you been here? Oh, about a half an hour. I'd wish they'd hurry. I never realized it took so long to join a nudist camp. Neither did I. I'd like to be out in the sunshine right now.
Boy, me too.
And then the other girl like gives this smirk like she's about to start laughing.
I think that was one of my favorite. That was one of the points where I was like, okay, I'm going to be in for a lot of fun now, because there's obviously an attempt to put a plot or some weird. Maybe it might have even been a jab at other nudist camps. Maybe they were like, maybe the nudist people were basically saying they had a hard time getting in or something. Like, who knows?
Well, I mean, that's possible. I mean, yeah, a lot of times these directors would throw in personal jabs against, you know, against other people. You see it all the time, and that's not the last time we'll see that. And if I notice any other ones that I know about, you know, I'll definitely point them out to you. But right around that point, like right after that point, like the girls basically like. They're accepted into the nudist camp. They go back into what they call the barracks,
The barracks. I love that.
Yeah, and they make their beds.
Yes.
Yeah, and then we have another required. I mean, this is completely required in every nudist camp movie. There is a bonfire scene.
The bonfire scene was great, and you know what I was expecting to see at the bonfire scene? Nudity.
Yeah, none.
But
none whatsoever. It was the cleanest bonfire scene I've ever seen.
So one girl's dancing.
Yeah, and yeah. There's a guy in the background, like pretending to hit on some drums
while people clap what is supposed to be to the beat. I think, but
look,
but
they're white.
It's not.
They're white. You gotta cut them some slack. They're white.
If you got some white friends, they'll be clapping like this, y'all.
And the audio dubbing was really bad.
It was really bad.
Yeah.
So the bonfire scene. So everybody's clothed. One girl dances. There's awkward clapping. Yeah. There's a line in the sand. I assume it's like a lighting cable or something like that. It just looked really out of place. They were on a soundstage. That's sort of what I got out of it.
No, they weren't.
Really?
No. Yeah, that was next to. Now, what would happen a lot of the times is they would kind of like shift things around. Like everything like it would cost too much money to rent a soundstage for something
okay.
like this. So what they would do is they would just heavily light, you know, one of the areas in the you know, at the nudist camp. Like these movies were start to finish shot at nudist camps, essentially.
Really?
Like I'm sure the hospital room was just one of the bedrooms in the nudist camp. You know, the barracks were probably some kind of like dormitory or probably more likely some like locker room, you know. You know, at the nudist colony. Yeah, everything would always be done at the nudist camp, essentially. I mean, I could be wrong, but
that was so
crazy.
Like I was so fooled because it just looked like this black room with some sand dumped in it.
Well, you know what they did that was great is that they, like, if you see later on, there's scenes of them like jumping into pools and stuff.
Yeah,
that's it. That's where they were filming. just from a different angle.
Oh.
Like they basically, the people were sitting up next to one of the pools. They built a bonfire on top of some imported sand, you know, right next to the pool, and that's basically what you're looking at.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, it's a pretty clever way to do it. But very keeping in the low budget aspect of these kind of movies. I mean, if you got to be able to crank these movies out in a couple of days, you know, and have them finished within a week so you can get them on the road.
Yeah.
But this is the scene where we first see the Beast.
Yes.
And please remind our audience, what is the Beast?
The Beast is the director in a gorilla suit.
Man, the gorilla suit, and you could always tell when the Beast is about to come out because they cut to this same shot of bushes, you know, and the director in the gorilla suit would come bounding out, you know, like of these bushes. And like there was one, like he does it like three or four times. Like you actually don't see the Beast that much,
no.
In the movie, but you know, for a movie called The Beast that killed Women, you really don't see the Beast too much. But there's one really, my favorite one is when he comes out and like he kind of gets caught up in one of the bushes and he tries to play it off like he's trying to look through the bush, you know.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, like you can tell like his leg or something is completely caught up in the bush and he eventually frees himself and runs out. You know, because you got to remember, you know, second takes cost money.
Yeah, so. That's exactly it. Well, and the whole movie was built off improvisation, so I guess he went with it.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing, the Beast comes out, and he's got to find himself a woman. This is when we're introduced to the Tahitian huts, or the Tahitian village.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really funny. They had these really flimsy wicker houses. I guess they're supposed to be by the beach.
Yeah, and nobody can pronounce Tahitian.
Yeah, exactly. So they go. He goes and finds a girl, and like the people at the bonfire, she also is fully clothed in the brightest clothes. They're like this green and red.
Well, actually, I believe that girl, I think her outfit is the inspiration for the art on the box. I just want to look that up because. Because it's pretty wild.
Yeah, and same. Just to go back a bit, the room that they wake up in at the beginning of the movie, the two sort of the husband and wife characters, that is the brightest room ever too. It had like orange picture frames.
Yeah,
everything's just so popping. Like whenever they have like a room or something, it's just so bright. I guess that's the '60s.
Well, you know what it is you know, it was sort of done as a direct like antithesis of like early dirty films where everything would be really dark and like you know, and that way so you could avoid being caught by the cops, you know, like if a cop stuck his head in and he couldn't really see what was going on screen, you know, that was one way of getting around being arrested essentially. But yeah, I think the nudist camp movies did the exact opposite. They flaunted it. They completely flaunted the nudity because they had found a loophole in the law that said if the nudity is portrayed in an educational manner, then you could get away with it. Now the Beast that killed Women doesn't qualify under educational whatsoever.
I didn't learn anything.
But this is sort of towards the end of that whole era where, you know, right before the real nudie cutie movies came into play, where they stopped giving a shit,
yeah.
You know, and like all of these movies would basically be like these shitty horror movies set in nudist camps because the horror part would be what attracts people in.
Okay. That's crazy.
I know way too much about
this.
You
do. I'm bowing down on this side.
Well, this is, I don't know if we've explained this at all, but this whole era of film, like this is what I do. This is my thing, you know, like I know I've been studying and watching like this era of filmmaking, like the, you know, the Something Weird movies, the 30s through 70s exploitation films, you know, literally since like 1997. So I mean, like, I've got like a decade and a half of these movies under my belt, and I love them to death.
Where I'm sort of coming into a lot of them fresh. I've always been excited by B movies, exploitation camp stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But a lot of these, like, I look through Something Weird, a bunch of them I recognize, but a bunch of them I've just never gotten around to seeing. So
yeah.
So we're getting interesting perspectives here.
Yeah, and that's what the great thing about Something Weird is too, is that, you know, I mean, their catalog is immense.
Jeez, it's huge.
Yeah.
Sweet. Should we get back to the movie?
Yeah, I guess.
Whatever.
Yeah, so, I mean, really, I mean, as far as plot is concerned, there's really only two more things that happen in the movie anyway. You know, the beast kills women and cops talk to people. That's all that really happens in the rest of the movie.
So it should be qualified that the beast kills a woman.
Yeah, that's really true. I mean, the beast only really kills one person.
Yeah.
So really, this movie should be called The Beast That Kills Woman.
Yes.
Yeah, because that brightly colored first woman is really the only one he actually successfully gets, because, you know, the cops, you know, they find the body the next day. The reactions on the faces of the two nudists who find the body are priceless. They go back to camp and they call the cops. And then basically there's like 15 minutes of like rumors and murmurs and mumbling. I mean, just an ungodly long period of mumbling that goes on, you know, interwoven with, you know, the cops interviewing people terribly. Like, all of the interviews seem to take place in front of this, like, Coke machine.
You know this girl quite well, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm going to have to ask you to answer a few more questions downtown later on, all right?
All right.
We're going to have a full investigation on this, and I'd like your complete cooperation.
Well, you've got no problem there. Anything I can do to help, anything. Well, this will ruin my camp's business. You just tell me what you want.
Well, let's start with the guest list immediately.
Right away. Come on, follow me, and I'll get it for you.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. The other thing that I loved about the discovery of the body is that they led up to the discovery of the body with the exact same upbeat, happy music that they play every time they show the nudist walking around. But they awkwardly interrupt it with, I guess, what is supposed to be the body discovering music. It was just amazing because they just kind of stop and the music kind of goes and then cuts to the new music.
Well, the audio in this, the audio, I mean, you got to kind of forgive the audio a little bit, because a lot of the times, like, you know, the audio track will have been lost for ages, and they'll have to, like, splice in a different audio track with, you know, that they get off of a different print with the better print copy of the movie, and it's just, it doesn't work sometimes, but, and this is one of those cases where it really doesn't work.
It doesn't work. It's funny, but I love the music. Like, there was something charming about the music whenever they would cut to the ladies.
Oh yeah. I think that was done on, I think that was done very much on purpose.
To make things a bit lighter.
I loved the cop characters. Because, like, it seemed like every time a cop was on screen, like, the only thing he really cared about, like, he didn't care about the murder investigation, he didn't care if you answered his questions or not, really, all he cared about was if you were cooperating.
We're going to have a full investigation on this, and I'd like your complete cooperation.
Yeah.
It seems like every time a cop is on screen, with the exception of the cop who's talking to the guy in the hospital, but in every other case, the cop is always like, "Ma'am, I need you to cooperate."
I'd like your complete cooperation.
Yeah, I know.
I'm gonna need your cooperation.
I'd like your complete cooperation.
The interrogation scenes are great because they don't really get much out of them.
I'd like your complete cooperation.
Yeah.
And eventually, I find the best part for like just, I guess not a plot hole, but like a happy surprise with the interrogations, is that they never lead anywhere.
Ever.
After that series of interrogations, there's sort of a montage while the girls are talking about what's terrifying them. There's this really happy music playing, which eventually fades in. The music is actually the music for the square dance.
Betty, I'm so glad you didn't come. You just don't know what it's been like. Oh, it's been awful.
You know, she really looked horrible, lying in a dress with all the blood covering her.
Well, I couldn't look at her.
Hi.
Hi. Don't you think that it's going to spoil the camp's business?
Oh, I don't think so. Something like that couldn't happen again.
Well, I don't know. Let's go home, please.
Oh, come on, you've worried too much. Go to bed.
Which
yeah.
They eventually cut to the night of the murder, but everybody's having a great square dance.
I gotta tell you, there is nothing more disturbing than naked square dance.
I thought it was pretty hilarious.
Now, I am a fan of the boobies, but I gotta tell you, man, like, those things were flippity and floppity all over the place, and it terrified me.
And I have to voice my complaint now that basically at a nudist colony, all the guys wear shorts.
Well, not all of them.
You saw some butt.
You got to see some butt, and I think there's one scene where, there's that one scene where, like, 75 people jump in the pool at the same time, and I think there's one dude who kind of, you know, jumps into the pool wrong. You kind of see his nuts a little bit, but really,
just a little bit, yeah. They actually were really good at when they jump. They'd be running to the pool, but when they go to jump, they'd keep their legs tightly closed.
Yeah. Yeah, because the guys who are going to see this movie, you know, they're on my team, not yours.
I know. Hey. Which makes me wonder. Imagine like a 50-50 movie. What that would be like? It would be kind of weird. So you'd have like girls occasionally wearing halter tops, but guys like pantsless.
Well, I mean, like, they're definitely more apt. I mean, something like this was a little more mainstream, and so they didn't really. I think, what did they call it? They had a name for it when they would show dick on screen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be wrong, but I think they called it a sausage flick.
Oh, really?
When they would show the the dick on screen as well, and there's plenty of those. I mean, there are definitely this is a way more innocent than some of these other movies would be, and you'd get that a lot where they would do equal both ways and to show everybody just completely naked.
Really,
I think this one was vying for more. I don't want to say respectability, but I think it was vying to allow more play.
It was aiming at the mainstream, really.
Well, the mainstream of Grindhouse, Grindhouse nudist films. Yeah, they were trying to be a little bit more respectful, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, we have the square dance.
Mm-hmm.
What I found most interesting, because I hadn't clued in actually, with my intense gaze staring at the screen, I hadn't realized yet that the husband and wife had yet to actually arrive at the nudist camp. It's not until after the square dance that they arrive.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is the police are interrogating him to find out what went on, but he wasn't there when the murder happened. That's the best part.
Yeah, that's absolutely the best part, is that he's telling a story of something he has no idea what it is.
And what do they do when they arrive? They hear that there's been a murder, and because the price was cheap, I guess, and they were available because nobody wanted to be there, they decide they're going to go stay at the Tahitian hut.
Yeah. So you decided that you're going to use the Tahitian. So you're right. They get it. Out of sheer, like, you know, like, they're just totally jumping on it. You know, they're like, oh, these things are never available. They're always booked weeks in advance. You know, and since somebody had been murdered in one the night before,
it can't happen twice. I think. It's
yeah, yeah. They're like, yeah. They're like, that's not going to happen again. What's the likelihood of a murderer attacking the same place twice?
You know? So they arrive again on a clothing kick. They arrive. They're fully clothed.
And which is ironic because if you remember from the beginning of the movie, the whole reason she wanted to go there was so that she could get an even tan.
Yeah, because she couldn't. I guess the creepy neighbor, Mr. Smith, or something, would watch her. So yeah. They're going to get an even. She wants to go get an even tan. She's really upset. She's like ready to get naked in their backyard or their front yard.
Yeah, she's like, I am so ready to whip out these big boys.
And they show up, and not only do they show up fully clothed, they get ready to go to the Tahitian hut, but first he has to get his sweater.
Honey, you sure you want to stay down there tonight?
Of course I do.
Well, we really don't know what happened last night.
I know, but as long as I'm with you, I'll feel safe.
All right, let me get my sweater.
Of course.
He says the line, "All right, let me get my sweater." Because, you know, they're at a nudist camp, so they need more clothes.
and meanwhile, he walks off, and she's just standing there for some reason. And he must have improvised the next line, because he's like, "Well, are you coming?"
Yeah, no. I thought she was supposed to wait. You were getting a sweater, but
what I would have thought too. I mean, like, you know, if she was playing improv on that scene, which she absolutely was,
yes.
I'm sure she was given no direction whatsoever. But if he says, "Well, I'll be back. I'm going to go grab my sweater," you know, I would stay there too.
Totally. Unfortunately for her, she gets called away, and the gorilla's back.
Yes.
You know, he wouldn't strike twice.
look, killers never attack in the same place twice. that is gumshoe fact number one.
That's true, but I guess this time they were wrong. In fact, I think it's probably the same hut.
Oh, I'm sure.
He essentially hands his girlfriend over to him too, doesn't he? He lifts her up into the hut where the gorilla already is waiting for her.
Yeah, I love how he, I mean, like, yeah, because the gorilla grabs the girl, and then he shows up, and he's, you know, there's like a scuffle going on.
He gets thrown into the lake.
Yeah, he gets thrown into the lake, which like, later on when he's describing, like, him getting thrown into the lake, it's so great. He's like, "No, but when that beast threw me into the lake, I knew it was not human." Man, but right after this, this is sort of like the most essential scene of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, the entire story revolves around this one scene. You know, the beast, like, nobody took it seriously with the first murder because they didn't know what was going on. You know, people were leaving, but they hadn't, like, left in droves yet.
Yeah.
So now it's like night two. The beast has attacked again. You know, and now everybody's like, "Oh shit, this is serious." You know, and then you get the saddest sight in a nudist movie ever, and that's a mass scene of like seven or eight women getting dressed.
Well, having an awkward conversation about what's going on. It was great.
"He threw him right in the lake. He must have the strength of 10 men.
She said he was big and hairy. It must have been some kind of an animal.
I don't think I like it around here anymore."
Well, I guess it was sad for you. I thought it was hilarious.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, it's yes. it has its moments of both, I suppose. But you know, most straight guys don't like watching women put a bra on.
True. Though we skipped two essential things that need to be mentioned.
Please.
One is the scream, which they use both for the victim and for Betty when she gets attacked.
Yeah.
I don't know about that scream. I, like, obviously it's somebody else doing it, probably like ADR'd. I almost thought it was like the director trying to put on his best girly scream, because it does not sound normal. There's something wrong with that scream. And the other thing is, did you notice when Betty screams for help, all the girls do is jump into bed together?
actually, anytime anything happens, all the girls jump into bed.
If they are scared, if they're needed.
"Wake up. Wake up. What's the matter? Did you have anything? No, I was sound asleep. I thought I heard a woman scream. No, maybe it was one of the dancers. Maybe I was just dreaming."
There are two two couples. There's the couple from the beginning of the movie who, the couple from the beginning of the movie who all they wanted to do was join this nudist colony, and then there's another couple which consists of like two very like Teutonic,
Scandinavian ladies.
Yeah, Scandinavian or German whatever, women with really like horrifically thick accents.
Yeah.
You know. And one of them is wearing the best underwear. I mean, I don't mean best isn't like sexy. I mean best isn't like it should not be on her. Because like I mean, now I'm fairly certain that my love of like flabby chubby asses comes from these movies, but so I don't have a problem with a lady with a little weight on her, you know. I never really have, but definitely cemented in these movies. And and one of the Scandinavian German whatever women is just so like oddly shaped that like her underwear is like up to it, like it's so weird. Like I'm trying to think of what you would call it, cuz I'm not like a connoisseur of like underwear, but I think you would call it like a French cut.
Okay.
You know, like where it kind of comes up into like a string and then goes back out again into like a full bottom. You know what I'm talking
about? I cannot remember the underwear at all, but I know what you're describing.
Yeah, yeah. And
blocked it out.
Yeah, no. It's such a little thing, and probably, you know, most people wouldn't notice it anyway, but if you watch this movie, it's the Teutonic lady on the right, the one who's actually facing the camera.
Okay, yeah.
Like her underwear gave me the biggest laugh in the movie because it was absolutely the wrong underwear for that woman.
We should totally get a screenshot of it, put it up on Facebook or something, so that we can share this with people.
Yeah, I like the fact that like of all of my shows, this is the only one that actually uses its Facebook page.
Facebook.com Something Weird Podcast.
Sweet,
we got a plug too. We're plugging ourselves. It's awesome.
Oh man, that sounds dirty.
So the husband, I just want to jump back in. The husband's in the hospital. They cut back to the hospital scene again.
Yep.
Now he's been lifted and thrown into the lake, which caused internal injuries. Apparently, mm-hmm. The doctor eventually, or I guess the nurse, comes in, says that he's fine, and there's another interrogation, which is totally amazing. Well, actually, no, or am I going to get mixed up? Was it him or was it her that got interrogated next by the cop?
No, I think it's him.
It's him.
Because that's the interrogation where he says, oh, I thought it might have been a man in
that's
a gorilla
right,
suit.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And then we're led back. It's just after that we get to the nudists leaving.
Yes.
Yeah, that was pretty fantastic. I'm just trying to remember through the film now. I called it a film.
No, it was shot on film.
So, oh yes, now I remember what I was trying to get at. So, he knew it was an ape, because the ape grabbed him, lifted him up, and threw him.
Yes.
But it wasn't until about the second or third interrogation that he informed the police officer of this.
Well, you know, he had internal injuries.
That's true, I guess he might be in shock or something.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Oh, and at the end of the interrogation, that's when he checks to see if his wife is all right. So he's been through all of that, and literally it's an, oh, by the way. is my wife all right?
Yeah, I've told you this whole entire story, but, you know, is my wife all right? You know, I'm too busy worrying about my Jell-O and water crackers, you know.
Which I have to say was my favorite scene of the whole movie. He had a tantrum.
Jell-O and soda crackers? Oh, what kind of a lunch is that?
Now, come on, be a good patient. You don't have much longer after the test this afternoon. The doctor said you could have a steak for dinner.
But there's nothing the matter with me.
I'm sure there isn't, but we have to make sure. Come on now, eat your Jell-O. I can't stay here all day. I have other patients who are really sick.
He was just miserable.
Jell-O.
He was so miserable with that Jell-O. He's like, damn it, I am a nudist.
I should not be having Jell-O and crackers.
He's like, I see enough Jell-O every time I go to the colony. There's always room for Jell-O, but damn it, this jiggle is too much.
And he has a great line with the cop where he's like, would you like some Jell-O? As the cop is leaving. It's like, he keeps bringing it up. It pissed him off. I wonder if like that's all they had to eat on set. Jell-O and soda crackers.
Well, I think the thing was that, like, I mean, of course, this is, of course, after the nurse tells him that he's fine. You know, they cut back to him and he's got the Jell-O and the soda crackers, which I think I said water crackers before, but whatever.
How classy.
Yeah, man. And, yeah, so he's got the Jell-O and the water crackers. I said it again, the soda crackers in front of him. And he's just miserable because I guess they have to do some more testing after the nurse tells him he's completely fine. Okay.
You're fine. We have to do more tests.
Oh, man. But then right after that, we've got, like, man, I wish I knew more about art because, like, this next shot was, like, a fucking piece of art. Maybe you know. Who's that, the artist who painted in dots, and he was kind of famous for having that scene in the field with all the people sitting around.
Surratt.
Yeah, well...
Yeah.
Well, he's... So the next scene is... I mean, it's the most useless scene in the entire movie. A completely total filler. You know,
The second montage.
Yeah, this is sort of like a montage, but there's this, like, slow pan shot. You know, sort of from like right to left, and it's just all of these like nudists just sitting naked in a field, and
I know exactly where you're getting at. Yeah,
yeah, and it looks a lot like that painting, like the you know, the and it's probably the most artful shot in the entire movie, but it's just such filler. It's so amazing that they wasted so much like cinematography, you know, and like setup for this one throwaway shot that means nothing to the plot, means nothing to anything. It's just total just cheesecake.
You know? But I guess it was maybe that was his artistic flair coming out, you know.
Yeah. And then another ass walks by.
Yes. There was a lot of ass going by at
that
point.
Did we mention that yet? Because that happens a lot.
There's a lot of ass buys.
Yeah, because you can call them walk by assings. You know, like every other scene, you know, there's always just somebody walking by, and there's their ass, and they almost always say something ridiculous like, "Oh, hey guys," you know, as they're walking by. You know,
the opening sequence, one of the first things when we first go to the nudist camp is there's that amazing scene where it looks like a bunch of lost women wandering the woods.
And
that kept happening. They cut to another scene, and it looked like these very confused, like they've been drugged, and they're just kind of wandering around. And there's a lot of butt shots, and occasionally.
And just for the record, there's a very good chance that they were drugged.
Very true.
Yeah,
I mean, you should always keep that in mind.
You got to remember that most movies in this era were made because some hippie said, "Sure, I'll take my clothes off for some pot." You know.
Good payment, I guess.
For back then, it was. And then we get a shot of nude shuffleboard, and then another ass walks by.
And this is, but the whole, wasn't this whole scene as we were introduced to the police woman character?
Led
into the various scenes.
Exactly. So this is another setup for another one of our rounds of, you know, like they introduced the cop. The woman cop.
Yeah.
She doesn't really say much of anything, nobody really says much of anything to her. She just kind of like walks through the nudist camp, and then as soon as she's done walking through the nudist camp, we set up with the first group of people talking about how the cop is going to be used as bait. Then the second group of people talking about how the cop is going to be used as bait. Then the third group of people talking, you know, and it's just like, oh, I would never do that.
Yeah. They're all, you know? Would you do that? I wouldn't do that. I'm scared. No.
Yeah, exactly, and it's just more of the same dialogue, you know. But then we're treated to another scene with the beast, and I believe this is the last beast scene.
This is the last beast scene, and it's really cool. The policewoman's been chosen to be a decoy, and she's put into the same hut where all the danger has happened previously.
Yeah,
and in the next hut over is a couple of cops with guns.
I love how they're like, yeah, don't worry, we'll be in the next hut over with guns.
We'll be in the next hut with guns.
Are you ready? Yes, sir.
Are you sure everything's all right?
Yes, sir.
Well, don't worry about a thing. We'll be in the next hut with guns. Now, let's go, because it may be a long wait.
So, we have, it was amazing. We had the recap. The girls, again, the beast comes out. I don't know why the guy, when the beast attacks the woman, she screams. And the cops,
and they just sit
like
there.
Minute.
They're like George W. Bush on 9/11. They just sit there.
Ho, ho, ho!
They're so confused. And we get to cut to scenes of the girls, again, being scared and jumping into bed together.
Yeah.
I have a question. Why didn't the policewoman have a gun? Like she could have hit it behind her. She didn't even have to hide it. She just had to sit there and aim at the door.
Yeah. Well, because clearly you put more thought into this movie than
they did. That's my problem here. Everything that happened, I'm like, now why didn't they do this?
Yeah, so basically two more things happen in this movie, and then it's done.
Yeah.
There's a chase scene. The cops chase the ape back to its home. They shoot it dead. It's the most anticlimactic, final battle between man and beast that I've ever seen. It's just
shot from like far away, and he fell down.
Yeah, and he just falls dead. Yeah. The end. So the beast is dead. And all the people come back, and basically it's like the next morning, and all of the nudists are like streaming back into the camp, despite the fact that a woman's been murdered there, and mm-hmm. there was an ape gone wild,
And immediately after the gorilla is killed, though, is what I would consider to be the most gratuitous boob shot of the movie, where they have this girl on the phone calling to say that things okay, but frame her from the neck down to the waist.
Oh, you know what?
Call.
Yeah, you know what? My guess on this, and it makes sense when you think about it, is that this woman was probably willing to show her breasts as long as her face wasn't shown.
Yeah.
So that's probably what that's all about. It's completely ridiculous and totally unnecessary. They probably did. Now that I'm thinking about it, they probably shot that after the fact.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they probably shot that after the fact, and that was the only person they could get to do that scene. hey, you got to do what you got to do, I guess. But in all of this, we find out that there was a woman who owned the gorilla. Illegally.
And there was a guy at the camp who knew all along.
Yeah,
there's
always a guy who knows.
Hey, officer.
Yes.
Have you found out who owned that gorilla yet?
No, that's what we're investigating. Why, do you know anything about it?
Well, I was doing a roof a couple of weeks ago in an estate.
Oh.
And as I went to go into the garage, the woman got pretty shook up. Seems she had some kind of a big animal in there.
Oh? Where was this?
1482 Truman.
Mm-hmm. Your name?
Ronald.
Ronald what?
Wyatt.
Okay, that's very good information. We may need you later on.
He explains it all, and he's like, I guess I should have told you.
So the movie ends on they arrest the woman, and then all is well.
But did you find that scene really weird and kind of off-putting?
When they arrest her?
Yeah, it was so bizarre. There's this big house, and it's sort of like the scene sort of out of nowhere. They end the last scene basically saying, let's go investigate this. And then there's this extended scene where they have audio of children playing. And there's no other audio. The guys talk and knock and shuffle around on the ground, but there's no sound of them doing that.
Yeah,
you just hear these kids playing.
And the way they would do it too, it was also disconcerting the way they would do it too, is that anytime somebody opened a door, it would start. Anytime somebody closed the door, it would stop.
It was
it was almost like she lived next to like a daycare center or something, like a schoolyard.
Or she ran one.
Yeah.
And there's and they walk in and she's like out back looking out over the lake, I guess forlorn because she's probably wondering where her gorilla is. And all of this in silent, like there's the sound of the children, but everything else is silent.
Yeah, no, you're right. It is very disconcerting.
Yeah, now, watching that scene, I was like, if they did this on purpose, then the movie is genius.
Well, the problem is that it's already like 63 minutes into the film by this point, and like, yes. You know, and most people who are watching it who aren't insane, or you, I guess,
yes,
are asleep at this point. So I mean, nobody really gets to see this pure genius, you know.
I thought it was genius. I was very impressed. That was a scene where, like, at the end. And I think I do this a lot, because when I saw the Canadian movie The Pit, which was a really bad horror movie from I guess the early 80s,
yeah,
I thought it was a work of art as well, and they had these scenes. The final scene blew me away, but when I showed it to friends, they didn't quite see it the same way I saw it, so I think I see things differently.
Well, I mean, I can understand that. I mean, I see art and shit a lot of the times, yeah. Too. And I mean, which is one of the main reasons why I love these movies so much is it's exactly that. You can see the art in the crap. Mm. And you know, and that right there is the difference between a so bad it's good movie and a so bad it's bad movie.
Yes.
You know, I mean, something like The Beast That Killed Woman, yeah, it's not good, but if you can see, you know, if you can see the love and the appreciation that's put into these films, I mean, and obviously these movies were made, you know, to make money.
Yes.
You know, all movies are made to make money. You know, but these ones were done with flair and with like panache. You know, it's so much different than a lot of this shit coming out nowadays.
Yes, I agree. We just turned it into an art film. That's crazy.
Well, I mean, and you know what? Call me pretentious, but I mean, I can totally, you know, I can totally see this as an art film. It's not a good movie.
No.
You know, so you kind of have to look at it from like an artistic standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, but not too artistic, because then you start seeing all like every little flaw, and you're like, oh, I don't want to do anything with that. But you know, but I mean, as far as like this is probably a better movie to talk about than to actually watch.
You know, we've actually almost talked about it the length of the entire film.
Yeah, this would be almost interesting to sit down and watch as a commentary with the film itself. Mm-hmm. But actually, probably not, because I wouldn't be able to time up all the audio cues, you know, with the film itself. But it doesn't matter. It's, you know, it's a good movie to check out. It's probably a great place to start if you're thinking about checking out like nudist camp movies. Mm-hmm. Like either this or Nude on the Moon, really any nudist camp movie is done by Doris Wishman, assuming you can find the ones actually listed as Doris Wishman and not mm-hmm. like her 900 pseudonyms. But yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything else to say about this.
Yeah, the only other thing I could really say, just because I thought it was fantastic, is that my favorite dialogue was with, I call them the bunk buddies, which were the two ones who had wanted to join the colony. The very first, the first two. There are about five conversations that go on in this movie, and I highly suggest anybody who watches it pay close attention to them. They're pretty amazing.
Hey, what's the matter? Joey has stopped. We can sleep now.
But I've been asleep all this time.
I'm sorry.
There's almost like this hatred between the upper and lower bunk. They don't really seem to get along that well unless something scary is happening.
Yeah,
I thought it was pretty great.
Yeah, they start off real nice with each other, you know, like, oh, you know, I don't know, I don't like the top bunk, you know, oh, that's no problem, yeah. I'll take the top bunk, you know, and then of course, you know, like the skinny, prettier one has to help the fatter one up, you know, like push her up onto the top bunk, and then it seems like from there on there's like a lot of you know, condescension between
one wakes
the two
the other
of
one
them.
Up. The other one was asleep, thought the other one wasn't, all that kind of stuff. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But they were two of the best characters, and the movie also ends on a punchline.
I hate to tell you this, but your test turned out all right. You can go now.
Well, good. Have I given me my pants?
Okay.
Well,
I can do this by myself.
And you from a nudist camp.
But I thought it was pretty great that they actually pulled out a punchline for the end of the movie. Mm. Before the, I guess, you need to have a required butt jiggle or something at the end of the movie, because they had a butt jiggle.
Well, I don't know if it's required, but I mean, hey, you know, send them off with a bang, I guess.
Awesome. Well, I think we've covered the whole movie.
Well, we certainly did. We tore that one to pieces. Not in a bad way.
No. So I guess to follow up, finish this off, you can find the movie on Something Weird. Mm-hmm. That's where we grabbed it. So anybody who really wants to see it, that's a good place to go.
I think it's a pretty safe bet. I think it's a pretty safe bet that most of the movies we're going to do from here on out are going to be from Something Weird.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, I think it'd be, well, obviously we'll announce it if we don't.
Yeah.
You know, but I was thinking, of what we could do next. I mean, I don't know if you had given it any thought, but I was thinking, there's a director who is. You know, who should be considered the worst director of all time.
Okay.
And his name is Andy Milligan.
Okay.
Now, Andy Milligan has done, like, two good movies, in my opinion, like, ever. And I was thinking we would do one of his good movies next. It's this movie called It's this movie called The Body Beneath.
That sounds great. Let's do that.
All right. It's a really great, like, Dracula picture.
You got my vote. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Sweet. So I guess that'll be episode 3. And you can also follow up with us. We have a Facebook page, mm-hmm. Something Weird Podcast. And I try to get on there and post poster art and commentary. And
I was going to say, you post on there way more than I do, and I'm thankful for that, because no problem. I'm never on Facebook ever. However, on Twitter, I mean, you can follow me at Drunk on VHS.
You can follow me on the Potoroo, which is Potoroo.
And also you can follow the Second Unit Podcast Network, which we are a part of, at 2ndunitpodnet.
Awesome.
That's for the Second Unit Podcast Network, of which we are a part of. Also, you can get our shows on Podomatic.
Mm-hmm.
It's somethingweird.podomatic.com. Also, since we're plugging everything now, you can listen to all of the Second Unit Podcast Network shows at 2upn.blogspot.com.
Awesome.
All of the newest episodes of all 6 Second Unit shows are on there.
Do we have coverage? Have we mentioned everything? I'm looking around at my notes and seeing if there's anything else that needs to be said.
Are there any shout outs you want to give this week?
Oh, Lord. Actually, I guess I should do a shout out to Till, who's one of my friends and who asked me to say booby tonight. And I fulfilled my obligation.
Huzzah. I mean, I don't think I have any real shout outs tonight. Just visit, like us on Facebook and find me on Twitter and come say hi.
Definitely.
Oh, if you have any questions or comments, if you want to tell us how much you love and or hate our show, I accept all forms of mail, love or hate. You can email us at somethingweirdthiswaycomes@gmail.com.
Perfect.
I think we put this baby to bed.
I think it's time before we hit 60. We're almost at 60 minutes. All right. So this has been a lot of fun. Thank you, Mo.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
Yay. And I guess we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
That's true. All right, brother.
Okay, see ya.
Bye.
Yay.
Yay!
We have a few seconds before it starts.
Oh, I don't.
There it goes.
Okay. Thank you.
No, I just gotta sit down without knocking. Oh.
Oh! Oh.
Cheese and bacon, I feel like making love. Beautiful Sunday, I feel like making love. Oh no, there she goes, come back. I love you so. Where does she go every day? I don't know. You are so lovely. I feel like making love. Shimmering water. You're coming back, you know. I'm from the wrong side of the track, you know. I love you, you do too, how about that?